Hey, good afternoon, folks. Right now, we'll have the talk, What's Up with Wicked 8 and Java 8 by Margin Dutchhorst.
Yep. In one time.
I'm terrible with names. So we'll have some time for questions at the end. And please just wait until I hand you over the microphone, so everything gets properly recorded. Yeah, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Welcome to What's Up with Wicked 8 and Java 8. I'm Martin Dutchhorst. I'm VP of Apache Wicked. I contribute since its inception to the project. I work for a Dutch company, and that's why my English is interlaced with Dutch words sometimes. So forgive me if I speak sometimes a little bit Dutch to you. You can find me on Twitter at Dutchhorst, and sometimes I post pictures of cats, and sometimes I post pictures of people presenting about Wicked. And my Apache committer ID is Dutchhorst. So what am I going to talk about? So first I want to explain why Java 8 for Wicked 8. Then a short piece about the Wicked 8's noteworthy new features. Then we'll dive into Java 8 Datetime API, the Java 8 Optional API, and then the major point, Java 8 Lambdas. And I'll show you how bad or how well a migration of a large project goes towards Wicked 8. So let's first start with why Java 8 for Wicked 8. If you write Java 8 code, if you looked at at Java 8 code with lambdas, you get very concise code. Few lines of code is necessary to get a nice functionality. It eliminates a lot of anonymous inner classes, and that makes code more readable. With the optional the optional type, it's easier to document which parts of your API are optional or which parts are required. And why wait until Wicked 8 and not introduce it earlier? Because Java EE 7 and Java 8 in servers are getting support right about now, at least if you're paying customer for large companies as IBM or Oracle. And because we use semantic versioning for our API migrations, we can only break API in major versions. So if we want to make Java 8 an integral part of Wicked, of the Wicked API, and make programming Wicked applications much more fun, we have to break some API. And that we can only do that in big versions. And finally, the last argument for why Wicked 8 moves to Java 8 and not earlier is because the versions line up nicely. So Wicked 5 works with Java 5. Or Wicked 1.5 works with Java 2 1.5.x, so as it's originally named. Wicked 6 runs with Java 6. Wicked 7 requires Java 7. Wicked 8 requires Java 8. So the next logical conclusion will be that Wicked 9 probably will require Java 9. So when can you expect a Wicked 8 final release? And what can you expect from it? It won't ship probably with all the bells and whistles. We are still working out all the kinks of the API. And rather than ship a broken API that we have to change, so we break semantic versioning, we'd rather ship less and add later. And it might require still a couple of months to get right, all because of the use semantic versioning. Okay, the noteworthy features for Wicked 8. Well, basically, it's everything in Wicked 7.x, because we are a framework that's already 12 years old. And, if you have major new stuff happening in 12 years, after 12 years, then probably you didn't do any, it's something not right. So everything in 7.x is also noteworthy in 8.x. And the major thing theme in the this version is the Java 8ification, I like to call it. So applying optional T, providing default methods, and using lambdas everywhere. So, but where are the new features? Well, in the it's the ecosystem stupid. It's a well-known quote. It's innovation happens elsewhere. So while Wicket itself is a nice compact core which provides a decent set of functionality, we are but a small team. We can't provide everything. So, for instance, the Bootstrap integration, we can't build that with our small team and also do React integration or do other kinds of integrations. So we use our community, our Grinder community, to provide those integrations, and that's where most of the action happens. So you can find a shortlist on our website, wicketapache.org community. There's a nice shortlist of community projects. We have the big project, Wicket Stuff. There's a new project for Spring Boot users that integrates nicely with Wicket. So that's the Wicket Spring Boot project. And of course, Wicket Bootstrap for building user interfaces based on Bootstrap from Twitter. Okay, the first of the changes. Java 8 introduced finally a working date time API, and Wicket provides support for those through the converter system. So there's a local date converter, a local date time converter, etc. And these are already registered for your convenience, so you don't have to do anything if you run Wicket 8 with Java 8. You already can convert these things. The converters are necessary because the HTTP protocol submits all data as text strings, and the HTTP protocol doesn't know about Java types. So we have to convert from string to Java types and from Java types to strings. And we do that with the iConverter interface that has two methods, convert to object and convert to string. That's everything about the Java date time APIs. Next, Java 8 optional. And discussions about optionals, they go back to 2011 when Igor Feinberg, a well-known committer for the project, he found that oftentimes with an AJAX fallback link, which is an AJAX link that also works when you don't have an AJAX request capability. For instance, back in the old days, screen readers for blind people didn't have any JavaScript execution. Or somebody might have disabled JavaScript execution because he thinks it's more safe. So the AJAX fallback link falls back to a regular request if JavaScript is not working or it can't connect through AJAX. So when an onclick happens in that in this link, the AJAX request target, that is the envelope where you put all your components in that need to be rendered again, might be null. So the parameter might be null, and that could cause null pointer exceptions. So this is how such an AJAX fallback link looks like. So we have an onclick, and we add to the target a label. But the target might be null. So when you execute this code, and for some reason a browser doesn't execute its JavaScript code, you will get a null pointer exception at that point. And sometimes that this happens, even unintentionally, because there is a JavaScript error during initialization of your page. And that's why the event handlers for JavaScript were not registered. So if you look at how Wicket 8 solves this, it's by changing the API and making the target, the AJAX request target, an optional. So now you actually have to deal with the fact that the thing cannot be present. And you can use the target.ifPresent and provide it with a lambda. Or if you use it, you can call target dot is present and add the component to your target. Okay, Java 8 lambdas. Lambda expressions in Wicket can occur at many different concepts. So we have models, components, behaviors, where these things can come into fruition. Let's first start with models. We've made iModel a functional interface. And in Java 8 parlance, that means that you can, everywhere you have a functional interface, you can use a lambda expression. So everywhere where an iModel is used in our API, you can substitute it for a lambda expression. So what are models? Models are things that components need to display or need to modify. It's the connection between your Wicket component and your data. So here we have a label that displays Hello World. We have a label that displays the last name of a person using a property model, and that executes the last name expression to the person object. So that results in calling get last name on the person. And finally, we have a account model where that retrieves an account from a database, and we provide it with a text field and put that in a property model and provide the property model with a expression for retrieving the last name of the person of the account. And you can nest these things so that the property model, when it requires the account, will call on the account model to retrieve the object from the database and then only execute this property, which is really nice for lazy evaluation. So these are all models. Another thing where you can use models, not only for connecting your data to your components, is by using it in an attribute appender for something that modifies attributes of your component. So here we have an abstract read-only model. It's a model that only can return data, can't modify data. It only has a get object method. And when the component is required, it will return a class name, and otherwise it will return an empty string for the class name. It will modify the class attribute. So other models we use are models to retrieve data from the database. And of course, your database layer can be injected to your models. And this model is a loadable detachable model, will go to the database to retrieve a preference for absentee things in one of our school systems. And you can use this model to nest it in property models. So each property model will have the data available and attach to a property of your data. So how will this translate into Wicket 8 code? So here we have this Hello World label. Displays Hello World when rendered. How will this change in Wicket 8? It won't. It's still the same code. So this is a bad example for that. But if we have this last name property of a person and used with a property model, we can rewrite this. We can either provide a lambda expression that retrieves from the person the last name, or we can bind directly to the getName method of the person object. Another option is to use the lambda model, which is new in Wicket 8, provide it with a person model and bind to the person.getPersons get last name method. Or if we have a nested expression, so we provide it with an account model and bind to the account's person's last name, So we need to step over a property. We can do that with the Lambda model. We provide it with the account model. We bind the Lambda model to the account.getPerson. And the result of that model, we map it to the person's last name, because the Lambda model with the account getPerson returns ultimately a model that provides a person. And from that point, we can map it to a model that that connects to the person's last name. So this is a really nice way to work with the API. And this final example, the attribute appender with the read-only model, lots of code. If we transfer that to if we translate that to Wicket 8 code, it becomes quite small. So here we have a Lambda expression that does exactly the same thing as above, and in quite a few less lines of code. So this is really good and readable code. So that's why we say with Java 8, Wicket becomes much more concise and better readable. So those are the models. Next, we have components. And if, like I said, iModel is now a functional interface. So everywhere you can use where an iModel is required, you can accept Lambda expressions directly. So here we have the label that binds to that uses a property model. We can use those Lambda expressions directly, and we don't have to go through a iModel or a particular model. And that's really nice because it saves a lot of code. So here we have a typical component, a link that adds a cheese to a shopping cart. So it retrieves the cheese from the link, and it adds it to the cart when clicked. If we try to make this into Wicket 8, you can do it with a Lambda expression. So from the link, we call the onClick factory method, provided with the component identifier, and provided with a onClick handler. That is a Lambda expression that will add the cheese to the link or to the shopping cart. And as you can see, when you have more lines of code in your handlers, the amount of lines you start saving becomes less. So this works for form, link, everything basically that has an actionable component. A form can get submitted, a link can be clicked, a button can be clicked, a submit link can be submitted. And we also have a Lambda column that accepts Lambda expressions for displaying data in a table view. Next up, behaviors. We already saw behavior, the attribute appender. Behaviors are typically used to modify the attributes of a component or add behavior to a component. So for example, here we have a behavior that puts the color red into the style tag of the component we add the attribute, the behavior to. If we want to change this into Java 8 or in Wicket 8 code, we can do it using these factory methods. The one is on component tag. It gets the tag as the parameter. You can call and perform the same actions. Or, and this one is new, it's the behavior.onAttribute, and that does the same thing, but even with less code and more clarity, I think. So it's all nice with behaviors and with Lambda expressions in Java 8 land and Wicket. But are there no difficulties? Sure there are. The first problem is that you have to make everything serializable, because Wicket retains server-side state, and the way we retain server-side state is by serializing your component tree, store it on disk, and when a request comes in, we deserialize the component tree and perform the action. So our first attempt at introducing lambdas into Wicket, we have this class It has an abstract method for onClick. So we create a public factory method, the onClick method, and it gets an ID and a consumer that gets a T. We provide it, we create a new link, a subclass of it, anonymous in a class. We create the onClick method. And in the onClick method, we bind it to the handler. We get as a parameter to the consumer. So we say handler.accept this. Really nice and rosy. So when we wanted to use this, we add the link using the onClick factory method, and we provide it with a lambda expression that basically doesn't do anything at this moment. And we started running this in our application, and we got a not serializable exception. Great. And why is that? It's because consumer is an interface, a functional interface, that is not serializable. And therefore, the Java compiler, when it sees that lambda expression, creates a piece of code that is also not serializable. Okay, well, we can fix that. Then we'll introduce something, a consumer, that is serializable. So that's our second attempt. We created our own functional interfaces that were serializable. So we have Wicked Consumer that extends serializable and extends consumer, and Wicked Supplier that extends serializable and extends supplier, and Wicked Function that extends, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The problem with this method is that these functional interfaces were not usable, reusable, outside of Wicked. If you wanted to use a serializable a lambda expression generated from your data layer in a Wicked component, you had to make your data layer dependent on Wicked. And that's the wrong way around. So we made in our own frameworks in-house our own serializable functional interfaces. But those are, again, in conflict with Wicked's versions. So what we needed was a library, something that provides those serializable interfaces for us, but that is reusable outside of Wicked. And that's our attempt three. So we found a nice library by Jakub Danek, JDK Serializable Functional, on GitHub. It has no dependencies, and it provides all the functional interfaces as a serializable in a serializable form. So our projects, internal projects, can depend on this in the data layer, and Wicked can depend on it, and everything is compatible again. So this looks like this. We have a serializable consumer, extends serializable, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So you'll find serializable consumer everywhere in our Wicked API. So if you look back at the example I gave next previously, the link, the only thing we changed was consumer into a serializable consumer, and now it just works. Because serializable consumer is serializable, the Java compiler will translate the lambda expression into a serializable piece of code. And yay, it works. Another problem with Java serialization, or with Java 8 and Wicked, is that closures capture too much. So if you have this piece of code in a page, we retrieve a person from the database. And typically, people use Hibernate as their database connectivity tool. And this person, when you retrieve it from the database using Hibernate, it has a connection with the persistence context of that particular request. If you go to a next request, that persistence context is no longer valid. So what happens when you use this in a lambda expression? You bind the person to the lambda expression. And when you create the page, the person is retrieved from the database. It is bound to the lambda expression. The page gets rendered to the client, and Wicket serializes the page and waits for the next request. When the next request comes in and tries to modify the person, Wicket will deserialize the page, and the instance of the previous request of the person is deserialized as well in the tree. And it has a connection with the previous persistence context of the previous request. So if you try to do any actions, in the best case scenario, you get an exception that the object is not persistent, or that it's a stale object, or you get strange behaviors. This example, where we have a page constructor with a parameter, an object O, and if we add it use it in a lambda for a link, the O might not be serializable. If you create the page with a string, it will work. But if we provide it with a non-serializable object, this code will fail. And this is even a problem with Wicket before Java 8 that's also not serializable. It's a previous problem. The only thing is that using Java 8, the O, this, if you use Java 7 with this code, it will get an error because O is not final as a parameter. So references to O can change between code blocks. Java 8, they made things implicitly final. So if an or effectively final. So if an object reference doesn't change, the reference is assumed to be final, and can be used in code blocks. And they made that so because otherwise working with lambdas is really terrible. But it introduces some of these bad bugs for us. So those are the difficulties you run into when using Java 8 and Wicket 8. And is everything okay now? Can we start using Wicket 8? Maybe not. So here's a small critique of Wicket 8 and Java 8 together with all the things we just discussed. This is a small disclaimer. This is not a critique of the work of all the developers. It's just a measure of the maturity of the API as it currently stands, and the API will continue to evolve and become better. A lot of work went into it, but there's still a lot of work to be done. So one of the problems I ran into when preparing for this talk was closure clarity. So what is the output of this piece of code? This in a page, we have we set the model of the page to a string page model. We have a link, and in its onClick handler, we print get default model object that retrieves the string from a model. We set on the link the default model to the text link model, and we add the link to the page. So if you render this page and you click on the link, what would you expect in the output of the console to appear? At first glance, I would say link model, because the model of the link says it contains the string link model. But if you run this, it will actually be render page model. And that's because the get default model object of the lambda expression binds to the outer context due to its closure. So this makes it more difficult to reason about what goes into a method, or what's into the scope. Perhaps this is just getting used to Java 8 and closures, but this illustrates a nice point. and something you should look after if you if you're transitioning to this type of development. Another problem I saw while reviewing the Wicked 8 code base was a combinatorial explosion of factory methods. So we had this typical component, the link that adds a cheese to the to a shopping cart, and it has an onClick method. And we had a nice a lambda expression. We can use a factory method with a lambda expression that adds the cheese to the cheese cart. Okay, this you if you assume this is a typical component, then you're correct. But many components in our code base not only override the onClick method, but also override other methods, like onConfigure to configure whether the link is visible or not. For instance, you might not want to display an add to cart link if the cheese is not in stock. And this is not the only method you can override. You have onInitialize, onConfigure, onBefore render, render, onAfter render, onComponent deck, etc., etc., etc. All those methods are methods you want to override in your components. And this will, if you enable this on each of those factory methods, then you get a long list of names you need to configure. Less syntax is nice, but makes code also less readable. I challenge you, this is a typical component in Wicked 7 and prior, an AJAX submit link that overrides two methods, on submit and on error. In the on submit, we get a registration model, we register a new student, we go to the next step in the registration wizard, and we redraw the registration wizard. In the on error, if there's an error, we update the feedback panel in the AJAX request. If we translate this to Java 8 Lambda method that's currently available in Wicked 8, AJAX submit link dot on submit register, and we get two lambda expressions. But I can't see anymore which lambda expression pertains to which method. Now I have to look up the method or the parameter name of the factory method. This makes the code less readable. A committer suggested creating the methods for registering and error situations on the page and then using method references. But that's basically lifting the carpet and shoving the bad stuff under it. Because you don't save code, and the onRegister and onSubmit, I think, are probably better suited for the onSubmit link, the submit link, than rather the page. Another one, a small one, minor one, is we have this behavior with an onComponent tag event method, and it gets two parameters, component C and component tag T. If you look at the factory method for the onComponent tag, it only gets a T, the target, the component tag. But where's the component? I can't reference the component at this point anymore in this factory method. So this is not to dismiss the work of people, but this is more like we need to work with the API before we can finalize it and give it to a wider audience and release it, because we can't change it afterwards. Another thing that you might want to look at is is the performance of these things. And again, these are benchmarks, micro benchmarks lie, all statistics lie. After we seeing these things, people are already working on making things better. You can find a benchmark at my GitHub repository. These slides are available, so you can just look them up. So we have a couple of constructs, and which construct works performs better. So we have an anonymous inner class for an abstract read-only model that retrieves from an account model the person and the name. So it's always two steps in an object tree. We have a property model, which is the current way of doing things. So we provide it with an account model, and we provide it with the person.name expression, and call getObject on that. And finally, we have a Java 8 and Wicket 8 model. We provide it with the account model, or we could call it directly on it. We map the getPerson, and we map on that model the getName, and retrieve the object this way. So this is the Java 8 way of doing things. And measuring these things, the numbers from the performance test didn't say much, but when seeing how much things performed, property model, if you count that as performance 1, and you compare it to, for example, the chained lambda expression, the chained lambda expression performs 70 times better. So that's where you map multiple methods calls behind each other. If you have a direct lambda, that's a lambda expression that returns model.getObject.getPerson.getName, so that executes the expression directly, it's 99 times faster than just a property model. An abstract read-only model implementation is 120 times faster, and as a benchmark, just calling account.getPerson.getName has 164 times the performance of just calling the or against the property model. So with Lambda 8, Wicket 8 with lambdas, you can get two benefits. It's faster and it's more type safe, because when you rename the property, the getter methods and the setter methods will also be renamed. But whereas with property expressions, you still have to look for those strings. Another thing you can look at is memory efficiency. So we have this object tree, an account has a person and a person has a name. If we look at in memory count, it's 96 bytes. If you put it in a model, it takes up 112 bytes. If we put a method reference to the constructor of an account in a Java 8 model, Wicket 8 model, it's just 16 bytes. If we create a loadable detachable model using the same constructor argument, it claims 40 bytes of memory. If we do it the old-fashioned way, and we create our own custom class, a loadable detachable model that extends the Wicket loadable detachable model, it takes 24 bytes. And if you use an anonymous inner class that returns the thing, it's 65 bytes. If you use a lambda model with a property with a lambda expression, it claims 72 bytes. And if we use the chained version, where we map the account's person to the account the person's name, it takes 120 bytes. And finally, if we use the lambda model and use the account model in it and map those things, it takes 160 bytes. And this is relevant for us as Wicket developers to account for memory usage, because you have millions of these objects in memory at any given time if you run your application. So these are things we are looking into to make more efficient. For reference, the property model takes 128 bytes that provides the same functionality. Wicket depends also on serialization, and these are the numbers for serialization sizes. So just the account is 222 bytes, the property model is 1128 bytes, and the lambda model again is the biggest consumer of bandwidth when serialization happens. And old way and new way compared is where you can see the biggest increase. So the old way of creating a loadable detachable model takes 123 bytes when serialized. And the new way creates something of 900 bytes for the same functionality. Not dramatic, but something to keep in mind. Looking at component performance, when you have a container with a lot of children, what performs better? Getting the component by ID, iterating through the container's children, and when the ID matches, you break, or using the stream API of Java 8, where you filter the components and then find the first and then get the component. So at the first test with one child, getting the component using the get method gets 100 million operations per 5-second run. The for loop creates 105 million, and the stream is a factor 10 slower. Increase the number of children by 10, you see that the get method drops in performance. You only get 26 million operations. The for loop drops even further, and the stream halves, give or take halves, the performance. When you have 100 children, you see that the direct get method doesn't change that much. It remains at roughly 23, 24 million operations, whereas the for and the stream are basically on par with their performance. With 1,000, the get method is still the same, but the for and the stream, they drop a factor byte of 10. And when we run with 100,000 units, we get still the same performance with the get, and the other ones, they drop by a factor of 100 again. So there are not that many applications that have 100,000 components as a child. So this is a micro benchmark, but this illustrates nicely how the performance differences is between the for loop and the Java 8 streaming. Finally, final topic, migration towards Wicket 8. Preparing for these slides, I migrated a couple of our applications, starting from small to large, and these are my experiences. So there is a migration guide where you can look up what changed and why, most importantly, because not only you need to fix the breakage, but you also have to know why it broke so that you can know what the change will happen. And this is fairly complete. I didn't find that many things missing. First, I started with our in-house framework that has 172 lines of 1,000 lines of code. It runs currently on Wicket 7.5, so we keep it up to date with Wicket. And the number of compile errors I had to solve were 70. Not too bad. Next, I updated an application that uses this in-house framework, and it's 36,000 lines of code, roughly 100 pages of Wicket pages, and it had 55 errors, compile errors. The most common error was that links without generics didn't compile, so I had to add generics to those links because the compiler default method from iGeneric component wasn't inherited. I don't know why. In our web app 2, and then I had to stop migrating applications and work on the presentation. This is a big one. It's roughly 1 million lines of Java code. Give or take 1,000 pages, and it's our oldest Wicket application, so it has everything from Wicket 0.9 beta 15 code until Wicket 7.5. So it stretches quite a number of Wicket versions. And it only had 346 compile errors, and most were because the AJAX fallback link made AJAX request target optional, and the listener interfaces were changed to iRequest listener. Those were the biggest issues I had to contend with, and those are very simple things to modify. So I could solve these things in a couple of hours at most. So finally, I think, despite my criticisms and despite the problems there are, the Java 8 and Wicked 8 is great. I think it's also almost ready for release, but there are still some minor issues to work on before we can unleash it on the world. I would like to ask if there are any questions.
No questions?
No questions.
Well, please, let's give a round of applause.
Thank you.